Vaughn. It was a dynamite session, wasn't it?
Dynamite, man. One of the best yet.
Let's take it to the streets and see what they think, huh?
It's all right with me.
Let's go.
Down into a deep, dark, endless chasm. Down. Down. Down.
No, meet you in the subject, no. Nah, here you know. You know we may have a deal, you know. A special request. Go. I bet you get up and I'll be dancing and him say, I want to hear these lyrics tonight. So we say, all right, cool. Bring it. Hold it. Hold it.
Jamie Liddell, how long's it been?
Feels like years, but probably only a few months. I saw you at Traction.
Yeah,
that was the last time.
And we didn't
get rained on, but we watched and kind of in awe of the English bobbing their umbrellas. But yeah, that was it, wasn't it?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
It back.
So I started with Madeline Gear, 99, then I did Multiply, then Jim,
of course,
then Compass, then this one. So
you're long standing.
I'm old school.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
it's funny.
I signed with them in 99.
We're aging together.
Yeah, I mean it's they've been good to me.
Yeah,
I mean that's it. I mean a lot of those indie labels haven't made it. You know, so definitely speaks of Warp's kind of, you know, they know how to stay afloat, and they've made good signings. They've just kind of, you know, I think they embrace the idea of an indie label as opposed to just like, right, we're an electronic label, we're not gonna get any wider than, you know, Aphex and Square Pushers. So taking on Grizzly Bear and like more diverse stuff, really, it's been a good call for them. And of course me, amazing, great idea.
We'll be right back.
How does it work for a modern day musician like yourself? I mean, you know, avant-garde, yet mainstream, yet, you know, totally into the now. How does it work?
It's definitely a lot harder than it was for record sales, obviously. Everyone says that, and I've experienced that too. Basically, I make money in Europe playing shows. It's harder for me in America. I've never really... I think a lot of European artists experience the same thing. So I've never been fully embraced over there, much as I've tried. I mean, you know, I play. I've done a fair bit, but I've always kind of plateaued at a certain level. Trying to change that, you know, always. And, you know, you never know how things go on that level. But you just... I think it's it. You just kind of... I've always been in the mood for this sort of slow and steady. You don't necessarily need to sort of blow up or whatever. Cause I actually almost fear that, because if things get too hyped up, then I almost feel like you're inevitably going to have to kind of take a dive after, or like maybe sacrifice some of the things that I really appreciate not having to sacrifice. Like I feel like I'm in control of what I make artistically, and like, I wouldn't be probably doing it now if I felt like I was obliged to do something.
So there's no, when you make your record, you haven't got Warp going, can you have this, can we have, there's none of that going on.
No. They just let me
be you.
Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that would have always been the case. I mean, it might have been that had I like, when I delivered Multiply, it was definitely a bit of a shock. Because it was more mainstream than I think they'd anticipated, and it was definitely less electronic than some of the music that I'd done before. So it was a little bit like, what you're doing, you know? And
I mean, that must have, in a way, you have been ahead of the game on that, and sort of people, you've seen people doing what you were doing 5-6 years ago and having success with it after you. Do you feel that sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I thing about me is I never really stuck to anything. So if you want to look at, I mean, and there is that thing, the inevitable thing, I guess, that goes hand in hand with this, you know, talk about business, ultimately with a musician, with a signature, you know, often that kind of means that you have kind of a brand implied, and my brand is quite schizophrenic. Actually, I really don't like that word, not, you know, it just, it's probably quite true there, but I mean, you know, diverse, I guess, would be the more polite way of putting it. For me to stay interested, I've got to keep digging in the crates of my mind, you know what I mean, just kind of like pulling out stuff and going, oh man, what about if I did this, you know, this would be great, you know. And just, and then I sometimes do that and I think, oh, I don't know, maybe I've gone too far with this one, you know, maybe reel it in. And then, but the times when I've reeled it too far in, I've ended up like being, I felt a bit too polite or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, this time around I felt in a good place. I've settled in Nashville, slowed it down, like you said, but at the same time, sped up the process of making, because I've just got a great studio at home now and I can bring people over and they've got a spare room. Now we can cook a nice breakfast and just, it's really like no one's in a rush to get to a show. Like, you know, everyone's like focused on being there and they want to be there. And it's been great just having that. Actually, I've made loads of music. It's been cool.
You are so ready removed, just left to move for these tones. Misunderstood. Take those waters and settle down, settle down, maybe.
girls don't lie. Baby's fingers crossing the line. Lines and now do we see? Can you see? With green rubber, once clear again. Now one's passing and it's gone, 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 gone.
How big is Nashville? As a, is it a massive city?
No, it's definitely not. It's I've never been good with numbers. It's 60,000 million. I don't know, 600,000.
Birmingham?
I don't know. How big is it?
Bristol?
300,000. 300,000, there right. You go, see. That's
so, yeah.
The
no, facts no, so it's very, yeah, so the name is bigger than the city. I mean, you know, it's...
It's just, it's condensed.
Yeah.
Like, in terms
is
of
is it just
music,
recording people. Studios everywhere?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, but it'll be a bit like this. You know, we're in a very discreet, no one would perhaps know that we are in a recording studio now. On street level, you just walk past, a bit like walking your dog or whatever. So in Nashville, it's often like that. There's music row, as they call it, and it's basically just a row of houses. And you look inside and you think, well, what? And then obviously, sometimes I'm sure inside they're just these lavish, or perhaps not so lavish, just studios. And it's hard for them, though. I know for a fact that it's hard for those, you know, commercial studios to talk about the financial side of the game. It's like, with people having laptops and the ability to just sort of have a go wherever, those corporate facilities are definitely feeling it.
Are you, it's the country capital of the world, right? Country music, is that, am I saying it right? Because
I think it is. I think it's fair to say.
And you know,
obviously that's why I moved there.
It's an area of music that I'd always denied in myself. For all my early years, it just had all the wrong connotations in every respect. And then slowly, obviously, as you get into music and you realize that there's great stuff, and I mean, there's shitloads of great stuff there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it the same experience for you, or were you into it? Were you into
it? No, I'm the same as you.
Right.
I mean, obviously, we love Johnny Cash. We love the, I mean, you know, and Memphis is up the road, obviously. It's just a few hours up the road. So it's a funny place, Nashville. There's that kind of outlaw country thing that's kind of pretty mysterious and kind of amazing, you know what I mean? And the real, like, hillbilly sound that you don't really maybe look for. And, like, some of that, I don't know. We were out on literally having a classic Nashville porch moment, like, not so long ago, and it was the first time I'd ever seen that, a bunch of good old boys like picking away, like, and I gotta say, it's pretty moving. Because it's a great way of passing time. Talk about, like, in the internet age, no one will do that now, do you know what I mean? It's just a bunch of kind of, like, one kid was 16 and could really play, like, amazing guitarist, and like everyone was like, it was like taken for granted, like, oh, of course you can play, you know, to an insane level, just like whatever instrument, banjo, mandolin, like guitar, like upright bass, and just everyone was just nailing it, you know. And like, oh, let's do that song, you know, like, you know, old girl from up the lane or whatever. You know, I didn't know any of the songs, but it's like, oh, yeah, I haven't played that, you know, yeah, cool, yeah, we'll just count it off, you know. And off they go, just great musicians, you know what I mean? You can't deny it, and harmonizing, and it's just like... And so one of the old boys is this guy Ferg, and he recorded the last Johnny Cash album, and he's getting on a bit, looks a little rough. He's got this incredible voice, total Johnny Cash style, this like real deep storytelling style, and you're locked in, man. There's a fire, and you're just like, you know, you get the wide eyes. Perhaps that stuff is hard to capture on vinyl, but those moments, that's real, you know what I mean? That was ace. And I think after about an hour, I was like, maybe I wouldn't have minded if they switch it up a bit. But you know what I mean? It's kind of like that. But that's the thing. It's great to see that was a real treat. I think the thing that you and I, maybe you're talking about, we fear is that kind of like high octane country, you know, overproduced, sort of like right in your face, bright lights, kind of like twangy kind of like stuff that's a little bit intense.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit like, you know, people who hate jazz and they kind of think jazz is, you know, smooth jazz, but actually it's not real jazz, and then you kind of whatever.
No, exactly.
It's that, isn't it?
Totally.
If we were to play a Johnny Cash record, which record should we play right now that you think would be nice?
I actually never really had a full Johnny Cash rush. But one of the guys I used to live with was like kind of, he was really into like the most avant-garde business, you know, he'd always be playing. He literally, when I lived with him, he insisted on playing like three records at the same time. Like that was his style. He would never like listen to music. He always just wanted to make noise, you know, and it would just be like, you know, it would literally be a noise record with some yodeling on it and then, you know, just some other crazy business. So, but the thing is, when he wanted to relax, he'd just play pure Johnny Cash. Actually, his song, the one he always liked, was that one about the car that, you know, was made out of all the different pieces.
We'll find it.
You know that one? The 57, 57, yeah. 6, 56, 57. That's actually pretty good. You know the name of that song? One Piece at a Time. There you go. It's actually, you know, good message. It's a message basically of stealing from car factories, making your own car. You know, he's a rebel.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties roll by, and sometimes I'd hang my head and cry, 'cause I always wanted me one that was long and black. One day I devised myself a plan that should be the envy of most any man. I'd sneak it out of there in a lunchbox in my hand. Now getting caught meant getting fired, but I figured I'd have it all by the time I retired. I'd have me a car worth at least $100,000. I'd get it one piece at a time, and it wouldn't cost me a dime. You'll know it's me when I come through your town. I'm gonna ride around in style, I'm gonna drive everybody wild, 'cause I'll have the only one there is around. So the very next day when I punched in with my big lunchbox and with help from my friend, I left that day with a lunchbox full of gear. I've never considered myself a thief, but GM wouldn't miss just one little piece, especially if I strung it out over several years. The first day I got me a fuel pump, and the next day I got me an engine and a trunk, then I got me a transmission and all the chrome. The little things I could get in my big lunchbox, like nuts and bolts and all four shocks, but the big stuff we snuck out my buddy's mobile home. Now up to now my plan went all right, till we tried to put it all together one night, and that's when we noticed that something was definitely wrong. The transmission was a 53 and the motor turned out to be a 73, and when we tried to put in the bolts all the holes were gone. So we drilled it out so that it would fit, and with a little bit of help from an adapter kit, we had that engine running just like a song. Now the headlights, there was another sight. We had two on the left and one on the right, but when we pulled out the switch, all three of them come on. The back end looked kind of funny too, but we put it together, and when we got through, well, that's when we noticed that we only had one tail fin. About that time, my wife walked out, and I could see in her eyes that she had her doubts, but she opened the door and said, "Honey, take me for a spin." So we drove uptown just to get the tags, and I headed to ride on down Main Drag. I could hear everybody laughing for blocks around. But up there at the courthouse, they didn't laugh, 'cause to type it up, it took the whole staff, and when they got through, the title weighed 60 pounds. I got it one piece at a time, and it didn't cost me a dime. You'll know it's me when I come through your town. I'm gonna ride around in style, I'm gonna drive everybody wild, 'cause I'll have
the only one there is around.
How does it feel for you? How does it feel for you? I mean, obviously, you've made the move, right, to the States now. So, yeah. You know, apart from living in Nashville, it's a whole different way, is it? I mean, how... Family, you know, the whole...
Yeah, it's a different... I mean, I've always felt a bit of a wanderer. I haven't lived in England for about 13, 14 years because I took that time in Berlin for 9. Then I've been in America for 4, so...
could you see yourself coming back here?
Yeah, sure. I mean...
Where would you live?
Back pretty often. Probably London now. Right. I mean, that's the thing, that sort of the antidote to Nashville, obviously, is the big city. And, like, we definitely need to have a taste of it. I say we, I mean me and my wife. We moved out there for space and for, ultimately, you know, quality of life we couldn't get in New York. But that said, were there enough funds on tap, then we would probably move to the city again, you know.
Right, right. I assume that the new album obviously was recorded, right? Where was so is this your Nashville album?
It's homemade, yeah. If this is my Nashville album, it's been quite a confusing story, you know, because it's a very electronic record, and I sort of trying to channel, like, my get my Jam and Lewis on a little bit. I don't know if they ever set foot in Nashville, but I mean, maybe they did. It's very odd. I mean, I think that's all I mean, for me, like I said, Nashville just has been a great retreat. Cool place to set up a room, set up my keyboard, set everything up, have it all on, and just be able to make noise. So it really isn't about, you know, Nashville that hasn't sort of gotten in my blood. I'm not.
Are you doing all the music?
Not yodeling yet.
Are you doing all the music? Have you got guests? Have you, how's it working?
Yeah, I'm pretty much doing all the music. I mean, the album's called Jamie Liddell because, I mean, it wasn't something that I set out to do. I was like, oh, this is going to be my Jamie Liddell record or whatever. But over time, it felt like, okay, this is it. This is kind of like a full circle for me. I've got electronics. I've got, it's mostly based around synths and, you know, it's kind of like that electronic soul thing that I was always kind of dabbling with, and like trying to learn my songcraft on the side, almost, you know, doing a few records and kind of like getting the feathers in the cap on that level, and then just thinking, all right, what would happen if I took it back to, you know, that kind of headspace where I started, almost, and like, you know, inevitably you can't, you're in another place, but just the reflection is kind of like, it made me realize that I've landed in a new place. It almost feels like this is it. This is a culmination of all the things I've learned along the way. It's kind of like the best of me at this point. And I'm not doing the best of. Every time I say best of, I'm like, right, that's it. But I mean, this is almost like, this is like my first record, almost, it feels like to me, you know what I mean?
So you got that sort of first record satisfaction?
I have. I mean, I can still listen to it, which is very rare. I mean, I finished it a while ago, and like literally everything was recorded and mixed, and everything was done in the house. So it's the first time I've done that since 1999, I realized, because I mixed like Multiply in France and Jim in France and at the Compass in New York, and in studios I take the multi-tracks and we'd mix them somewhere else, and the whole experience of that is totally different. So I actually bought the console first and then wrote and recorded and mixed it on the same thing.
What kind of console?
It's like an old SSL. It was like a, you know, it's a very 80s choice. It was the same console they used to mix Opposites Attract, and it was amongst other things. I mean, I know that a lot of stuff's gone through that. It's the same console they used to do like Chronic.
How many tracks?
An E-series.
Is that SSL?
56 channels.
It's a big old
12
piece
foot long
kit, right? So where's that? In your basement?
Well, I've sold it now, but yeah, it was almost a ton. It was like when it left, it's sort of like an elephant has left like dents in the room. It was like, it was pretty, it's an epic thing.
Play me 3 tracks off your new album that you think that I should, that I'm going to like in particular.
Okay.
Go through them and then we'll play them afterwards.
All right. Blame Something is quite a good one in terms of the chronology. It's one of the few tracks on the album that actually started with a lyric, because a lot of the tracks that I made on this record were coming from kind of like more my old school way of working, which was just like make a musical bed that's kind of gave me enough to sort of spring off, and then just kind of like freestyle basically nonsense over the top.
So the music would always start with the music and the voice and the song on top of it.
Well, I just make enough music that I felt like I could sing on it, but then when I would sing, I wouldn't think about lyrics at all. I just kind of basically just free form on it, which is amazing, because you definitely come up with different shapes and shapes that feel natural over the music, especially when you've got, you know, when it's all like body music, you know what I mean? There's not that much room to maneuver sometimes. So finding a line that just kind of like rides the music, and like maybe you might end up with a lot of T's like in a section, and you might not know what the lyrics are, but you know there has to be T's in certain places. It kind of like does half of the work for you. So just finding like this missing lyric. And I feel like subconsciously you end up saying something even if you don't, even if it's just like, you know, a stream of consciousness that might not have any sense at the time. I feel like you are trying to say something. I definitely was. I think What Shame was the first song that that kind of found the public ear, and I've been really happy with the way people have been responding. They've been like loving that I've got this sort of, I'm coming back with a bit more of a attitude, I guess. And I really don't know why I don't do more, you know, like real heavy beat music with like just like screaming on top. It's like kind of like that's big part of how I think of music when I play live, and you know, I love just like, I mean, I end up sort of making, trying to focus my music in quite pop direction because I also love that, you know. So with that song, I kind of just focused a lot on just like keeping it simple, just making it bang as hard as I could, and I felt like it was just kind of rough and ready. It's kind of nice for me because I, like I say, I can't overthink stuff, and that was quite straight from the hip style.
Oh.
And what else? I like the song, well, seeing as I think you might like Do Yourself a Favour. I like that song as well.
That's lucky.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've got to live with these songs for the next couple of years. I mean, when I look at this list of titles, I'm just like, yeah, it is a lucky list. It's a lucky 11. And no, Do Yourself a Favour is it's a smooth roller. You know, it's got that sort of nighttime flavour. I was listening to a lot of Entombed and like Cameo and like I say, Jam and Lewis. And there's a little kind of like She's Strange kind of synth in the back. Like, I used to love that as like an Outkast tune with that. Like, and I was like, man, I haven't heard that for a while. You know, you'll hear it.
Maybe you're a sinner, maybe you're alright. To me, it just don't mean anything. Not gonna let you be the winner, not without a fight. Just say goodbye now. Well, well, well. Every little thing that you do, trying to play with me, but you know you better do yourself a favor. It don't work no way, no never.
Blackman, I mean, yeah. Like Sa Ra.
I mean, that's it.
Sa Ra was Cameo meets Sun Ra.
With a bit of
grimy southern hip hop thrown in.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to a lot of Atomic Dog for this record. I'll be honest, I'd forgotten just what a masterpiece Atomic Dog is.
Yeah,
and I think the reason why I think it's a masterpiece is because there's so much play in that music. You know what I mean? There's so much like. It's just all about, like, you know, feeling it and just letting it all hang out, you know? And I've really just tried to get back to that, just kind of like letting everything just kind of roll naturally. And so Atomic Dog is a, you know, it's obviously, it's It's weird because we moved to Nashville expecting to hear country music on the radio. We've got this amazing, like, basically the craziest black station, Night 2Q, it's called. They play Atomic Dog, like, on a weekly basis. They play, like, the Gap Band and, like, you know, they're just all these crazy, obvious, massive jams from back in the day. And, like, it's just so sweet to hear them on the radio, you know what I mean? You just realise that you just don't hear that stuff. So it's been huge for me just having that radio on all the time, because obviously Nashville, you've got drive everywhere. So the radio becomes a big, big thing again. I'd actually completely forgotten about the radio, I'll be honest. I know that's an obscene thing to say, but I got lost in the computer, just in tracks and not really tuned in. Do the dog catcher, baby, do the dog catcher.
Dog. Ooh.
Futuristic
Yeah, I'm quite interested as well, because I mean, there was this kind of super group of you guys, right? I mean, it was Chili Gonzalez and Mocky and Feist. Tell us a little bit about sort of how you lot met up and you know, how it's gone.
Well, it was as a Berlin thing. I think possibly, to be honest, an expat thing. You know, just kind of like hanging out and sort of wanted to make music, because we all did. And actually, to be honest, I was a little intimidated with someone like Gonzo. He is quite a forceful character in his own way. And in the beginning, he would just do these shows, and I'd go there and he'd just blab his chest hair out and he'd be like sweating on everyone. Just like, and him and Peaches would kind of be owning Berlin on that sort of performance level. And I would just sort of watch kind of wide-eyed, like, wow, these guys are... I hadn't seen anything like that before. I don't know why, because living in Brighton, there was plenty of performance, but nothing like that, you know, nothing that was quite musically satisfying on top of it, you know. So I got really into that whole sort of, how can I make my show just like a bit more full on, you know, and because I wanted to get my freak on, you know, and they just seemed like they didn't give a shit, you know, and I was like, oh, all right, well, if they don't care, then I don't have to care. So I think after a while, word got out, I think, to Gonzo that I was doing something through this guy, Taylor Savvy, who's often not mentioned in all of this, but he's like a key kind of connector to, like, you know, Feist and, you know, Peaches and another Canadian. They're all friends. And so it's a whole Canadian posse. And so once you're in, you're kind of in. I mean, not so much with Peaches. I never really got that close with her. But I mean, obviously, we're friends, and she's great, you know. I've always admired what she does, and she's just so dedicated and focused and takes her stuff so seriously, you know. And it's weird because it's such a joke in a way on the outside. Not a joke, but, you know, it's definitely, she's got that John Waters kind of B-movie edge to her Madonna thing, in a way, if you want to look at it like that. That's a horrible way of putting it, but you know what I mean. But she knows where she's at. But yeah, just all of that crew were always around. Mocky and I really just got the deepest, because I think we kind of had that thing, like we were at a point where we needed to get more ambitious together, and we were like, he saw in me something that he didn't have, maybe vocally, I guess, in a shallow way. But he knew that together we could make. I was actually floundering around, and you can hear me rambling around now, but I was. Musically, I was sitting between Muddling Gear and Multiply. It took me forever. It was like about 4 years. I had so many little half-finished pieces, and he would say, well, what you got? What songs you got? And Multiply was a classic example of that. It was just like a really strange, like, introverted drum machine thing, very slow and somber. And he couldn't hear the song, so he just picked up a guitar and sort of, and he was like, well, is it like this? Sort of started playing this kind of really upbeat version of it, and I just sort of laughed at him and said, well, yeah, it's like that, it's not like that, but I mean, you know what I mean. But then he said, well, then so we recorded it like that just because we wanted to put it down, and that's the version that ended up on the record, basically changed my whole career in a way. So, you know, I've definitely got Mocky to thank for a lot of just like the profile, and, you know,
well, so, definitely when there's a few people who, you know, groups of creative people together, they can really strengthen each other, right? And I mean, and motivate each other and encourage each other, and suddenly, you know, it's great to see how everybody's gone on to their own major careers, really.
I said,
Track, let's play a track from Mocky and a track from Gonzalez. I can't call him Chili Gonzalez. It seems like,
really?
Well, it's just like that came later, didn't it? I only knew him as Gonzalez. What should we play?
I'm always partial to the solo piano, I've got to say.
Mm.
As for Mocky, I think something off Saskamody.
That's a great record.
Yeah, and amazing. That's very Mocky. Mm. I'm really glad he did that record. I mean, he's still doing loads of great stuff. He's in LA now, and I spoke to him a little bit. I don't speak to him that much. It's a shame, but he's really just keeping on it, and it feels like something big's going to happen with him soon.
till I went through things I didn't know till I met you. Now I'm learning the hard way, learning the hard way, learning the hard way to be true. Now I'm learning the hard way.
Brad Frick, quickly tell me about them, because that's I can't wait for that. I've heard one track, but not with you. Was that another one done online? Was that another?
It wasn't, actually, and they were quite into doing the personal, you know, in studio hang. I was quite prepared to just do it at home. I mean, that's one of the things about Nashville. It's great. I've got a good setup. I can just plug in the mic and off I go, and I've done that a fair bit. But no, they wanted to do it in person, and. It's crazy with them, because I always loved the sound of their recordings, and I was like, I'm quite a nerd with all the mics and stuff. I was like, so where's all your gear, guys? You know, how do you record all these crazy orchestral instruments? And they're like real punks, those guys. It's like, oh, we just got this. It's got one mic. Then just turn it around and put it on something else. It's like a real cheap preamp, just no fancy business. Just like, they get this amazing sound. They've just got a computer and they've got good ideas.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, damn. Almost made me feel a bit like I've been throwing my money around, you know what I mean? Like buying all these different things. I could have just been going over their house Yeah, and so, I mean, it was brilliant. I used the same mic to do my vocal. And so, yeah, what a cool bunch. What a cool bunch.
Very ambitious.
You know what I mean? Those arrangements and playing with that band. I mean, you're kidding. Mm. It's mad. Mm. I haven't seen that since Matthew Herbert, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Have you got lined up for the next 6 months? What can we see you?
Yeah, well, I've got a bunch of live dates already emerged on the website, which is great. I mean, it's great to have them in my mind. I'm sort of still working out how I'm going to do this solo show, but
and it's solo.
Yeah, definitely solo. It's going to be the first time I've ever gone out really with like a real focused light show. So I'm working together with a bunch of real talented Londoners, Flatty, which are not really Londoners, they're from up north, but they live here, and I've known them for ages, and they've gone on to these great things, you know, down in the South Bank. They've been doing, like, you know, the launch of Tron. They were, like, you know, worked with Disney and VW to do these big, you know, projection mappings on buildings and stuff, so they ended up getting really deep into that, and I think they wanted to just have a break from that. And we've known each other for a while, so they wanted to do the whole creative kind of vision for my album. So they've done the artwork, and they're going to do this. Whilst I'm here in the next couple of days, I'm going to do a video for them. And and then they're going to work with me on the live show. So it's going to hopefully really have this kind of real solid visual feel to it. And so that's great. I'm going to be doing production rehearsals for that, probably in Belgium. Then getting on the road with this new show. And obviously the platinum selling next record. Taking care of business.
Brilliant.
And, you know.
Jamie Liddell, brilliant. I love seeing you. And let's make sure you get into the studio for a session.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. And I'm doing the solo stuff, I'm coming back with a looper, coming back with a brand new piece of technology. So there's some new school gonna go down.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Cheers.